save big money on everything for your spring projects. At Menards, we have all of your garden and landscaping essentials. Master Garden Premium Garden Soil contains a slow-release fertilizer that feeds gardens for up to 9 months. It produces better results and is ready to use for all your gardening needs. Save big on Menards' great selection of garden and landscaping products. Compare brands in-store or online at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, everybody, we are back. It is Dadcast. It is part two with UFC fighter Oday Osborne. Oday, welcome back, man. It feels like it's been a long time, man.
Right. It's been forever.
Now, in a right, woo! In the last episode, we talked a lot about fuckery. I think that's what part one is going to be. Going to be titled fuckery, and I'm going to have to a parent warning on that one.
But I like it.
You talked about your goals and what you need to achieve them and what you don't need in your life, et cetera, et cetera. I wanted to touch a little bit on that, but I need to go back. You mentioned that your upbringing was a little rough, per se. It was not the normal.
No.
Was your upbringing, did that help in catapulting into your successful fight career? Is it because of your upbringing you became a successful fighter, or do they have nothing to do with each other?
No, they have everything to do with each other.
Okay.
100%. I am the man I am, the fighter I am, and the future father I am because of my mother, because of my upbringing, because of all the struggles I've had to go through. It is impossible to become successful without struggling. And if you do become successful without struggling, you'll fumble. Because if you don't know how to handle failure, if you don't know how to handle turmoil, if you don't know how to handle trauma, if you don't know how to handle all that shit, when it does come and hit you, You got to be ready for that, man. You got to be like a Spartan with your shield. You know what I'm saying? All of that trauma, all of that shit that you grew up with, that's your shield. That's your shield. You know, I call it the bullshit shield. It's this blocking bullshit, like ching, ching. Right. I hear this blocking bullshit. You know what I mean? So for me, everything that I've been through in my life, including all the fuck ups, you know, including all the shit that, I didn't get to achieve, it has brought me here to become this person now. But it only works if you are aware and in tune to it. You can't just be like, well, you know, my childhood was fucked up, so that's why I am the way I am. No. You can't do that. That is how it's called, like I said, we make excuses for ourselves. As a society, it's something that we do. We have to analyze what happened in our childhood to get us to where we are, the way we are. And now, do we want to stay where we are? I'm a person that I'm competitive through and through. And I'm like, I hear people say this all the time. I won't change for nobody. I'm like, what? No, forget that. I'm trying to change. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to use my childhood. I'm trying to use my upbringing to be better, you know, because I had certain traumas where, you know, I felt like nobody really cared a lot about me.
Okay.
You know, like growing up in Jamaica, I felt like no one really cared about me. So because I had that, it internalized the fire within my brain. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna prove to you motherfuckers that I'm deserved to be loved.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that catapulted me. That is what catapulted me to my success. Because I felt like I wasn't loved. And not talking about my mom. My mom was in the States at the time. So she came up here to the United States 2 years prior and, you know, to work and to build a better life for me. But while I was there, like I said, those 2 years without my mom was miserable. And, you know, but it built that fire that I needed to catapult me. And it made me competitive because I'm like, you know what? Y'all don't love me now, but shit, just watch.
When did you start? When did you know that you were gonna fight for a living?
I didn't know that I was gonna fight for a living until like my freshman year in college.
Okay.
But I knew, but let me tell you this.
When did you know you were good at it?
Well, let's fast forward. Let's rewind. I knew that I was going to be something great when I was seven. I was 7 years old and I was in Jamaica and the airplanes was always flying over Jamaica. And, you know, I remember at 7 years old, I talk about this all the time. I would look up into the sky and I would hear the airplanes roar just going by. And I'd look up into the sky and I'd be like, someday, man, I'm going to be on that airplane and I'm going to be something great. I would always say that to myself. Someday I'm going to be on one of them airplanes. I'm going to be something great. And I just said it and I said it and I said it. And I kept saying it. You know what I mean?
You manifested it, man.
And then look, 9 years old, boom, got on that plane. And, you know, the journey of the Jamaican sensation started when I hit that. When I touched down into Brooklyn, New York. You know what I'm saying? And so, man, I would love to, do like a Netflix documentary. That's my goal, my future end goal. Do like a Netflix documentary of like what I went through as a kid. And because I'm going to be honest with you, a lot of the world has no idea what I went through my childhood. I've never came out about a lot of shit I went through. You know,
are you willing to give us an example now? We've got a pretty big platform, man. Over almost 1 million people. Now would be the time. You don't have to dig deep and tell us everything, but just a snippet, man.
You know what? Fuck it. Fuck it. I'll share. So probably I'll say maybe like 6 people know this. All right, no, I'll go with 10. Maybe like 10 people.
It's about to be about 1 million, so just be forewarned.
I'm about to drop this on Dadcast.
Okay, all right.
So before I came to the United States, you know, I suffered a lot of just traumatic abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse, you know, and
family member, like, kids in the neighborhood.
Family member, a lot of family member. My mom was, she's a very successful woman now, you know, and I feel like a lot of that was just jealousy towards my mom. You know what I'm saying? I feel a lot of times family members, when they see one family member being successful, they always, I don't know.
And that's a problem with society as a whole. Instead of lifting up and being proud, people get jealous and look down. I just don't understand it. This is family. They're doing great things. You should be. But anyway, sorry, go on.
No, and so with that being said, you know, when that happened, you know, I took the blunt end of that, you know what I'm saying? I felt now, because I didn't know why, you know what I'm saying? I remember as a kid, like, I never went to school. I never went to school. I remember I probably went to school maybe about, I don't know, a total of 20 times as a kid, you know? And every time I went to school, I'd hop on the bus. I was 7 years old. Hop on the bus, get on the bus, take the bus from 11 Mile, Bull Bay, it's called. Bull Bay, Kingston, all the way down to the town. We call it town. Here, town is like a farmer's market and everyone's selling goods. I would take the city bus all the way down to the town. I'd get off at town. I'd walk from town all the way to my school. You know, I'd do that every time. You know, I would able to get bus fare and I'd take my bus fare, take it to town, get off the bus, walk to school. 7 years old, no joke, 7 years old. And I do the same thing on the way back, you know, get on the bus, take the bus all the way home. But because the educational system in Jamaica is so fucked, like I don't even know, man. My grandma, she had told my mom that she thought I was gifted. And I was like, I don't, what? How? But anyways, my mom said that she held me back from school because she thought school was going to ruin me or whatever the case may be. Uh-huh. Anyways, moving forward, ended up staying with my aunt. And my aunt never really sent me to school like that. You know, I spent most of my time in the woods. And I didn't learn how to read until I was about 12 years old.
So you were already in the States then?
Yeah, okay. I was already in the States. And, you know, I struggled with school, everything. I remember being in class. Like, I remember being in class in Jamaica. And, you know, I really wanted to go to the bathroom and the teacher wouldn't let me. And I remember being in class and I peed myself in class. Like it was such a traumatic experience. I'll never forget that. You know, I peed myself in class and it was so traumatic, man. It was so traumatic.
Dude, I've got a same story, man. Seventh grade, my damn science teacher, Mr. Patenaude. Oh. That's how ingrained it is me. I had to take a dump, man, like bad. And
man.
And I'm not trying to make this as a funny, you know, light in here. It was so painful. I had to leave and he wouldn't let me go. And I finally just, I'm like, dude, I got to go. I literally barely made it. Let's just leave it at that. But that this baffles me that, you know, the teacher's not going to let a kid go. They're not, you know, anywho, sorry, go on. I share that experience with you, man.
No, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. But yeah, man, I remember like my aunt, she was very, very like, she was very strict. My mom's sister, you know, she was just kind of, I don't know why she was like this. Just so mean. You know what I'm saying? Just so mean. The only time she was nice to me was when my mom would send money down for me. And she would be like, sweet, like, oh, my sweet nephew. And, you know, I'd be like, oh, my aunt loves me. And I give her money. You know what I mean? Because I wanted to be loved, man. Yeah, I wanted to be loved.
Yeah.
I wanted to be loved. So I'd be like, oh, my mom, my aunt, you know, here you go. And she give me, you know, I give her money. And, you know, it lasted for like, shit, a day. And then she went back to being mean. But I remember when she found out that I wasn't good in math, you know, it was just like, oh man, it was so brutal. The amount of punishment I would get. I didn't know basic like times tables, like my two times tables and stuff like that. And, you know, I remember situations where, you know, she just hit me because every time I'd mess up, she'd hit me and, you know, she would lock me in a room and, I would, you know, and she would tell me like, I'm not, you know, when I come back, you better know your times tables. And when I say room, like we didn't have lights, we didn't have running water, nothing like that. You know what I'm saying? We had a bucket to go, you know, to piss and shit, whatever. We did have an outhouse though. But, you know, I remember it being just so dark in that room, you know, just so dark. And
so how the hell did you learn anything anyway in those conditions?
but man, I had to though, you know, I had to. And so I just remember crying and shaking and trying to memorize this. And I'm like, how am I supposed to even know this? Like, no one's ever taught it to me. I don't go to school that much. Like, what am I supposed to do? You know, no one taught me this shit, but I had to, you know, so I just spent those times going over it. And sure enough, I ended up learning my two times tables, man. And it was just like a glorious time because I was just like, oh, you know, because I was always afraid of her. You know, I was so intimidated by her. And eventually, like somebody told my mom in the States, like, yo, your sister's, you know, abusing your son. Like, and she was pissed. She was pissed. So she ended up having me go to my grandma. So I ended up living with my grandma for a while. And same shit happened, man. Same shit happened. My grandma was nice to me for a while. And then she just is mean as shit. Really didn't. She didn't give me a lot. But a lot of Jamaican culture is like that. You know what I'm saying? But it made me feel like, damn, nobody cares about me.
Right.
And so I enjoyed being out in the woods. I enjoyed being out in the woods. And so when it came time for me to come to the States, it was the greatest moment of my life. It was the greatest moment of my life. And my grandma that I was with, She got somebody that she knew to, you know, because in Jamaica, they profile you heavy. They profile you heavy. If you don't have like I don't know how it is now, but if you don't have like a background of like stature, they don't stamp your visa to go to the States or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So anyways, I ended up I was only supposed to come to the States for a little bit and I don't know what was going to happen. I have no idea what was going to happen, but I just know my grandma didn't really want me around and she didn't care what happened to me. So, she met this guy that could like, he had connections. put it that way.
Okay.
He had connections to getting me to the United States.
Okay.
And
have you been since you left as a dining? Have you been in the United States since?
No, actually, I haven't. So this is where the story gets interesting. This is where the story gets interesting. I can't believe I'm sharing this. So my grandma met this guy, and she pretty much paid him a bunch of money to get me up to the States. Anyways, my grandma tells my mom, like, go get your son. He's getting on a plane. My mom is like, what? You know what I mean? She gets the information and she gets me. And I just remember, you know, opening, like, back then, your parents could come to the gate. Like, yeah. People could come to the gate. Now it's not like that, you know. But I just remember, you know, seeing that and seeing my mom for the first time in 2 years. And it was like, I literally like dropped my bags and everything and just sprinted. Like it was like a slow motion clip in the movies, man. I just sprinted to her and I gave her the biggest hug. And you know, at the time my mom had, she had two choices to make or one choice to make. She could report it and send me back because
right.
I committed, you know what I mean? It's very frowned upon. And, you know, how could you do, I was her only child. You know, so I don't blame her. You know what I mean? So she chose to keep it a secret. And
how long did that last?
Till I was 25.
Holy shit. Okay.
Yeah. You know.
What a story, man, to get into the States. But you know what? It was all friggin' worth it. Some scary times. But
scary
here
times.
We are. And you made it to the land of opportunity that you said yourself that yeah. You are now teaching and giving to other children. It was such a great story.
Yeah, it's crazy too. And I've never, you know what I mean? Like I've like my mom was always, like I said, we were always like so I was always so traumatized because my mom and I knew I had to be extremely careful. There were times where, you know, people would pick on me in school, and I've had it where kids would just like punch me like dead in my face, just boom, like, you know what I'm saying? Because I would say something back to them. They pick on me and I say something back and they punch me. And I had to eat that, man. I had to eat those punches. It's happened multiple times where I had to eat those punches because I knew deep down I was an illegal immigrant. You get in a fight, all of a sudden you're raising flags and you don't want flags to be raised. And my mom could be in trouble. You know, could get my mom in trouble.
Did you use that fuel on the 16 fights you've had in the UFC? And do you still use that fuel?
Well, that fuel eventually was nullified at some point. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I got the love that I needed from my mom, and I got, you know what I mean? But I still had that fire though. I still had that desire, that burning passion. But, you know, when I was here, it was hard, man, because I couldn't even get an identification card that said I was Ode Osborne. I couldn't drive a car. So I had to lie all through high school. All my friends asked me, like, why don't you get a job? Why don't you know, I always got picked on for not having a job.
Right.
I got picked on for not having my license. And I always had to lie about it because I couldn't come out and say, oh yeah, I'm an illegal immigrant, because you know, I could get deported.
But
you know, I was always facing deportation.
Being that your mom, was she on a visa or was she an American citizen at the time?
Yeah, my mom is an American citizen. She's married, you know.
So what I don't understand, if she's a citizen and you are her son, how you know, why was there an issue?
Dude, our government is confusing that way.
Okay.
Because there's no way of proving that I'm Ode Osborne. You know what I'm saying? So that's where the issue comes in. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, so now,
here's take my blood DNA test. Let's go.
Yeah.
Seems pretty goddamn simple to me. But
what are they gonna match? But so now, 2011, Obama got elected into office, and 2012 he came up with this thing called the Dream Act, where children that were brought here that wasn't in their control, and they were brought here when they were a child and was an illegal immigrant, could now be grandfathered into what's called the DACA. The DACA stands for Dreamers. It's like a dreamer, a childhood of arrival, deferred action.
Right.
It's called deferred action, childhood arrivals. So that's what I am. I'm underneath. I'm classified as a DACA dreamer. And I have to get, you know, renewed every 2 years. But that ultimately saved my life because, you know, I ended up going to a private college, Carroll University in Wisconsin. And the only reason why I went to a private college was because I couldn't get a job. I couldn't work. And it required a social security, which I didn't have.
Yeah.
And private schools didn't have that. They didn't require those things. And so my mom had to pay out of pocket. You know, she was paying $500 every 2 weeks or every week out of pocket just so I can, you know, go to school. And eventually that well ran dry, you know what I mean? And we hit into a recession. I think it was 2012. I don't remember where, you know, we weren't working at the time. And, you know, I couldn't go back to school. I had to drop out of school. I was in Wisconsin and, you know, I had to make a decision. Like, I was like, damn, like, you know, I don't really know what to do with my life. I can't work. I don't know where to turn. That's part of why I believe I believe in God, because God's had my back since I was a kid. You know what I'm saying? Because I've always believed, always. And I never grew up in church, but I always grew up with this spiritual being just guiding me, you know? And, so when I got to 25 years old, finally, I got an attorney and I turned pro. I got into martial arts. So I met this guy, his name was Reese Shaner. He owned this MMA gym. And I was a year out of college. I was wrestling. I ended up making it to nationals my first year in college, defeating the number one ranked kid in the nation in my first year of college, you know, ended up choking. Ended up realizing later on in life that the reason why I choked at a lot of these tournaments and, you know, I would get there, right? I would always get to these big tournaments like the state tournament. I placed at state. Started wrestling when I was a freshman. I placed three times, fourth, third, and fifth, three times at state because I had that fire, but I could never close because of what was done to me. And because I always felt like, you know what? Success isn't going to happen and it's going to get taken away from me. So I'm just going to self-sabotage this moment because I'd rather self-sabotage the moment
and
than have
that,
it happen to me.
Right.
Because if I do it, it's easier for me to handle. You know what I'm saying? But if it happens to me out of my control, then I can't take it anymore. I can't bear that pain. I can't bear that suffering. So in those moments where I would make it to the finals, the state tournaments, I'd make it to the finals and, you know, regional tournaments, I would self-sabotage because it was easier for me to do than have somebody else do that.
Have you gotten rid of that?
Oh, for sure. I've slayed that dragon.
Slayed that son of a bitch. All right.
Yeah.
We're getting close to the end of our time together, Oday. We mentioned in part one that you wanted and will, your words, become a UFC champion.
Mm-hmm.
When's your next fight? Are there any fights scheduled? Who is the champ right now? And because I want to know who ass is going to get kicked here in the future.
I don't have any fights scheduled as of yet.
How does that process work? How do you get? Dana, I need a fight.
It's a long process. So let me go. I'm gonna touch back on this. I'm gonna wrap up what I was saying just a few minutes ago, just for a second, and then I'll touch back on this because this part is really important. When I met Reese Shaner and he told me that I could train at his gym for him. He's like, I could train at his gym as long as I came and I worked and did stuff in the gym and just showed up. Cause he knew he knew my story. He knew I couldn't work. I couldn't do anything. And he was so supportive and he was the first father figure, that really touched me. You know what I'm saying? The first guy that saw something special in me. And he gave me everything. I came from Florida and, you know, I was rough around the edges. And so he carefully molded and shaped me wasn't allowed to swear in his gym. I had to be respectful. He taught me discipline. He taught me how to drive. He taught me how to have a strong mindset. You know, he had like 5 different black belts. He was a martial artist through and through, you know, never lost a fight under him as a pro or an amateur. I think I fought for him more than I fought for myself because he gave me love that I never had. And, you know, he gave me everything. And, you know, he ended up passing away in a motorcycle accident, my third pro fight. Mm. And that crushed me. It crushed me, man. It really crushed me. I was, like I said, went from never losing a fight in my life to, you know. And so now when I search for coaches, it's almost like there's that thing that's missing, you know. And I've been from, you know, this has been my fifth gym now. And I feel like my standards are either too high for coaches where I set the, you know, I look for that thing that my first coach ever had, but it is what it is. That's not going to stop me. I'm here now and I would have never gotten here without him. I would have never gotten here without, you know, all the childhood shit that I've been through. I would have never gotten here. You know, I became a teacher because I wanted to give those kids what I didn't have. I learned to read when I was 12 years old and I struggled. And when I saw the kids in my classroom, when they would cry, when they would try to pronounce something or try to get a math problem right, and they couldn't and they would cry. I remember me crying as a kid. I remember me struggling as a kid to read. I remember all those things. And all I had to do was put my hand on their shoulder and be like, look, I got you. Like, don't worry about it. I got you. And they felt that. And that was the most rewarding thing for me, was giving them that feeling. And my classroom had the most growth out of every fucking class. Every class, my classroom had the most growth. Had nothing to do about how much I knew.
Yeah.
It just had to do about how much I poured into them.
It shows you how important, and this is the message we are at its core, what DadCast is about, how friggin' important it is to have a father or a father figure in your life. You lacked it. You got it. And now, what have you become, O'Day? The father figure yourself, and you're not even a dad yet. Good on you, brother. I just gave myself the chills talking about you.
Man, it's been a wild, like I said, it's been, and there's so much more shit that, that's why I need Netflix to get on this, man, because what's everything.
When's the last time you were back to Jamaica?
I have not been back to Jamaica. Right now I'm not allowed to go back to Jamaica until
we're going to have a hard time going back there to film the childhood scenes then.
Yeah. Hopefully with the immigration, everything gets cleared up. Right now, like I said, I'm not allowed to go back. But things are changing.
Right.
Things are changing. So
okay. With one final question then, because I'm going to give it two.
Go ahead.
Okay, O'Day, can we have you back on DadCast for another episode sometime in the not so distant future? Because I feel like we've barely touched on the story, especially about what you're doing for the kids. I already know the answer is yes. So thank you for that. Nick, you have questions?
Yeah. So I threw a thing on social media, had a couple of buddies, wanted to ask you a couple questions if you're cool with that.
Yeah, man, for sure. Okay.
So my buddy Scott Stickler wants to know, who is your biggest rival in the UFC?
I don't have any. Right now, currently, if you look up Cody Durden and I, right now, Cody Durden and I are going on, we're having a Twitter battle right now.
Oh.
So hopefully, if he accepts to fight me, it's gonna be war out there. And Cody Durden and I are going, we're going at it. And on Twitter, we're going back and forth, and it's going to be entertaining, man. We're going to entertain the fans, and it's going to be good.
I want to be ringside, man. Okay, Nick.
Last one. Our buddy Ian Levin, he wanted to know, what are your thoughts on fighter compensation, and how do you feel about fighters that are parents bringing their kids to the fights?
I love the fact that fighters who are parents bring their kids, because we're too soft. as a society. We're very soft.
Yeah.
It's two extremes, right? It's like one half is not sensitive enough and one half is just too soft. It's like we need to find that middle ground. We need to teach kids certain things. Now, I'm not saying bringing kids into violence. That's not what I'm saying. But introduce martial arts to children so that they can be strong-minded. It's not about fighting. It's about discipline.
Yes.
And that's what people have to understand. It has nothing to do with fighting, but has everything to do with discipline. It has everything to do with making weight. It has everything to do with preparing your future and being strong-minded. So I love it when fathers or mothers bring their kids to the fights. You know what I'm saying? Because they kids need that. They need that. They need to see what the world is like. Not to an extremist standpoint, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And what about the compensation part?
Oh, the comp. I purposely skipped that.
I know you did. All right. Well, there's your answer, Ian Levin. We're not going to get it from him today, but I'll talk to him off the air and I'll let you know. All right. And the final question, and it's not what you're expecting, Nick. In the soon to be in production Netflix documentary series on O'Day Osborne, who is your choice to play you in that movie?
Ooh. I feel like I would love if Jaden Smith played me because I saw Pursuit of Happiness and that touched my heart and I was like, ooh, that was me. You know what I'm saying? Pursuit of Happiness. That was like me and my mom. Instead of Will Smith, it was my mom.
Nice. You know?
And that touched my heart. And I was like, ooh, that's who.
I think one based on his mom and him, and then just like an actual documentary.
Right.
Yeah.
I would go with Michael Jordan, not the basketball player, but Michael B. Jordan. Yeah.
I mean, he passed away though, so we can't use him.
No. That was the Black Panther. That was the Black Panther.
He was the cousin.
I'm tripping. Who played him?
Yeah.
Creed. Come on, man. Yeah. Creed.
My bad.
Yeah. That's who I go with.
Yeah,
party people, ladies and gentlemen, for everyone watching worldwide, wherever you may be and however you may be listening or watching, thank you so much. This is Mr. O'Day Osborne, UFC fighter, humanitarian, the teacher of the children. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day, man, and chit-chatting with us. I look forward to bringing you on again in the future. I look forward to hanging out with you in Vegas soon. Thanks for coming on, man.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. I've gave y'all more than I've ever given anybody. Like I put out deep dark secrets on your show,
and I appreciate it, man.
Dark secrets. And
I tend to pull that out of people sometimes, so I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse.
I'll drop a quick bomb on you. Like, just gonna lighten the mood a little bit. I have a deep dark secret too. I got busted one time for drinking a whole beer out of a pitcher naked on stage at an undisclosed bar in Medford.
That's a good one.
It is frowned upon.
Oh, man.
Not like
and there's our clip.
All right.
He is O'Day Osborne. Thank you so very much, man. We appreciate you. To everyone watching, thank you so much. We appreciate you. Please like it up, subscribe, do all the things, and we'll catch you on the very next episode of Dadcast. Have a great rest of your day. See ya.